Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry.
I'm joined today by Natasha Devin, writer, LBC presenter and activist. Natasha writes and talks a lot about mental health, body image, gender and equality, and her new book, Clicks, How to Be Your Best Self Online, is a brilliant guide for young people in the online world. Natasha, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing today?
Really well, thank you. I'm kind of, you know, they teased us with a little bit of sun over the weekend. And now it's gone away again. I'm kind of like,
But people keep, it's funny because we are absolutely obsessed with the weather, aren't we, us Brits? And I've come across three people in the last 24 hours who have said to me, oh, but it's coming this the next week. We're going to have sunshine. We're clinging on to that with, you know, all our hope. What I love about your book, Natasha, is that it's not just coming to the conversation from a point of view of here's how you control your kids' usage of the internet. It's talking directly to young people. And there's very much a vibe of, look, the internet's here to stay, so we may as well use it wisely.
Yeah, I was talking to 14 to 18 year olds. I was doing some focus groups in schools and colleges about their social media education. And it reminded me of the sex education that I had at school. So our sex ed back in the 90s was very much, okay, the only way to avoid pregnancy and STIs is to abstain. That's the only way to guarantee. And that was pretty much it. And we were left thinking, okay, but what if we do have sex, though? How do we do it as safely as possible? How do we safeguard our physical and emotional health, you know, in that process? And I think that for many teenagers, it's that kind of draconian zero tolerance attitude that has been taken to social media, where they've basically been told you will be radicalized and groomed, and you'll send a naked photo to someone and your future employer will see it and you'll never be able to get a job and you'll end up living on the street and then you'll die. And that's not really a comprehensive education around social media. So I wanted to create something that was more about the nuts and bolts, you know, what to do if this happens to you.
Yeah. In defense of parents, though, I think it's important to say that, you know, so many of us have come from a point where we've learned very gradually about social media and the internet because it's kind of evolved as we've grown up as adults. And all of a sudden we've had, not all of a sudden we've had kids, but we've had kids. And then all of a sudden we've had to kind of think, oh, hang on a minute. We need to actually teach these young people how to use this thing. And so I guess you can't really blame, and I know you're not blaming, parents for taking that kind of slightly draconian, because I guess it's done from a place of slight panic and fear and just desperately wanting to do the right thing but feeling a little bit out of our depths.
And I totally get that if you don't understand the world that your child is inhabiting, logically it is safer to say just don't do it. However, the technology is, it's getting its claws into our life more and more and more, our professional lives and our personal lives. And at some point, they are going to have to not be in your care anymore and go out into the world and know how to practice self-regulation. And, you know, I'm as guilty of this as anyone. I'm not on TikTok. I have tried to talk in really broad brushstrokes in the book about the principles of how social media works and also some of the emotional journeys that you go on as a social media user, which anyone of any age can relate to, because I was super conscious that I want the book to stand the test of time. And in a year, they will have moved on to something else. So there was really no point in me talking about specific platforms, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, because you could be talking about TikTok, and then a few years' time, everyone's like, TikTok? No one uses that. You know, we're on to,
you know,
goobity-ga or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever's been invented. Yeah, and it's one of those things, isn't it, that, you know, it strikes me that developing healthy social media habits is something that a lot of us grown-ups need to do, never mind kids and young people. And I think probably that's what makes it harder for us, because we're there on the sofa scrolling endlessly, mindlessly, and we know that's not the healthiest way to use the internet. So it is that thing where it's like, you know, do what I say, not what I do, that classic kind of parenting, you know, mantra. It's not ideal, is it?
Our generation, and I am a millennial, but only just, are completely social media addicted. Mm. And we were almost a guinea pig generation for a lot of this stuff. We do have an advantage over younger people insofar as we remember life before this type of technology. So we've got a kind of reference point there. However, we were not told about the dangers from the get-go. And therefore, you have this generation of parents who are trying to guide their children through the technological revolution, having, you know, not necessarily worked on their own relationship with technology, because this all moves so fast, you know. And do you know what else I think? I was talking to my friend about this the other day. They were saying a friend of theirs has just had a baby and they came to visit and they couldn't believe how much attention a baby needs. And I said, you're absolutely right. Babies do need a lot of attention. My brothers are almost a decade younger than me, so I was very active in their care when I was a kid. So I remember that very well. However, babies' needs are simple. It's exhausting because they're demanding, but they need to be changed, fed or cuddled. And that's about it, right?
Yeah.
It's the parents of teenagers that I really feel for, because that is a minefield by comparison. The second guessing, they're trying to work out the complex layers of psychology and, you know, the friendship difficulties and the manipulation and the danger that they're in, and giving them enough freedom and allowing them to make mistakes, but protecting them at the same time. And no one talks about that. Well, it's certainly talked about less, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, actually, because I've got a 12-year-old, so, and she really, I mean, I class her as a teen because hormonally and developmentally she absolutely is. And I've got 4-year-old twins. And so I feel like I've kind of had that same kind of pinch point, you know, at a similar time. And I've spent a lot of time trying to work out, you know, what's harder. I mean, in a way, it doesn't really matter because, you know, kids are kids. We're all different. But it's very much something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. And I've had a lot of conversations with parents of teens who have said, this is the hardest stage that I have found. And absolutely, without a doubt, the internet and social media is a huge part of that. And I think that, you know, the conversations I've had with my friends, you know, we're advised, you know, like I remember going to a talk at my daughter's primary school, and they were saying, you know, you have to be using every app, you have to play every game, every online game, everything they're using, you have to know the ins and outs of it. Don't just assume that it's fine. And I'm like, oh my goodness, it's like another thing for us to do. Like,
yeah,
I've got to be on Roblox, I've got to be on, you know, Snapchat, and that's a huge amount of pressure.
And a huge amount of time, a huge investment of time as well. I do recommend asking your child to show you if they're on something, saying, can you show me how this works and explain to me why you like it? And coming to that conversation with a genuine curiosity, because that's a double benefit then. That's bonding time with your child, and it's teaching them to trust you. But at the same time, you're sort of learning the rudiments of how that works. So you're killing two birds with one stone. But yeah, I can understand why it is really daunting for parents. And I think that there is a kind of anxiety. So I experienced this not with in a parenting capacity, but a couple of weeks ago, my producer, who is at LBC, who is in her 20s, she just didn't turn up for work, and no one had been able to get hold of her all day. And we saw that the WhatsApps we were sending her were delivering, but they weren't being read, and her phone was going straight to voicemail. And I just went, she's dead.
Yeah.
She's dead. Right. Because she's a young woman and she left quite late the day before. And in my head, there was no other possible reason why she wouldn't have been in contact. Now, it turned out to be that she'd smashed her phone and she was waiting for the phone shop to repair it. And she was about an hour late into work and it was fine. But that anxiety, because we can get hold of each other, it increases the anxiety, because before the invention of mobile phones and smartphones, if you couldn't get hold of someone, you'd be like, oh, they're probably stuck on the tube or something.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I'd also say that quite a good thing to do if you are feeling anxiety around the time that it would take to delve into every app and every game and really try and work out the pros and cons and the pitfalls. There are some really good websites, aren't there, that can help. There's like Internet Matters. There are a few others, aren't there? I think you've worked with a few for your book.
Yes, so ChildNet is a really good source of information, and also Glitch. I'm an ambassador for that charity, and there's two things they do. The first thing is they look at women and girls' experiences online and how often, particularly women of color, their voices are pushed out of the online space. So they kind of advocate for a better social media experience for women and girls. But they also teach digital citizenship. So if you want to know how to kind of curate your online experience so that you don't see certain things, or, you know, when you step onto social media, it's serving you and giving you what you need as opposed to just whatever's there. They're a really good charity to check out.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And something that I did with my 12-year-old, she's been nagging me to download Snapchat onto her phone. And I've just been hard no, like she's got WhatsApp. But I've been hard no on any kind of traditional social media. But she's very much that kind of like, please, 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 like trying to wear you down. Yeah. So my husband had a great idea. He was like, right, tell you what, you go off and I want you to write a list of all the reasons, like go and research it, and all of the reasons why you think that it wouldn't be a good idea for you to use Snapchat, and all the reasons why you think it would be a good idea. And to be fair to her, she went off and did it. And we haven't yet, like, you know, assessed it and had a conversation with her. But I was like, actually, let's get you to do the research and you can find that. And then you can present back to us. So it's not just us, like you said, in that draconian way of saying you cannot do this, you know, because I said so. So we'll see how that pans out. But that's something to consider as well.
Definitely. And it's something that I actually recommend in the book, that the book is speaking to teenagers, but I encourage them to try and see things from their parents' point of view. And that's actually come from having so many conversations with teenagers where they'll say things to me like, oh, my mom's so annoying. She doesn't let me wear this really cool thing. And I'll say, well, why do you think that your mom's not letting you wear that? And they'll say, well, just to be annoying. And I'm like, okay, but maybe your mum has other priorities than just annoying you. So what other possible reasons could they be? And you kind of bring them to a place where you realize that it's about trying to keep them safe. And they genuinely go, oh, right, okay. So in the book, I've tried to help teenagers to understand, like, if your parents are saying, no, you can't go on this, it's either because they know lots about it and they've assessed that you're not ready, or that they don't know enough about it and they're worried that you won't be safe. So how are you going to approach the conversation knowing that that's their motivation?
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think it's like, you know, the fact that you do give young people advice on how to talk to their parents, I think it's so valuable, because young people don't get, it's like when you start a new job, you know, you're new in the world of work and you start a job, you get no advice on how to communicate with your boss. Like, there's so many management courses and how to deal with people who you manage, but not the other way around. And it's the same with parenting. There's so much out there about how to be a good parent, but there isn't anything really about how to be a good, you know, a good offspring, a good son or a daughter. It's just so, it's so valuable.
Yeah, it's true. There's very loose advice around kind of respecting your elders and all that.
But that's
kind of
so
stuff.
Dated, isn't it? And
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That whole, I mean, really, respect someone who's older than you. That's bollocks. Like, just because someone's older than you doesn't mean that you should treat them any differently. Really, I don't think.
Hmm. I mean, Jacob Rees-Mogg is older than me. Just saying.
Yeah. Unrelated point there, but yeah, fair enough. We hear so much, though, about like the online world and how it's a dark and murky place. But you make a really good point in the book that the internet isn't actually good or bad. It's a neutral entity, and it's how we use it that counts.
Yes. And what I was really pleased to see is that last week for Mental Health Awareness Week, Ofcom actually published a report which backs that up, saying that if young people have a high level of literacy when it comes to their social media, that can actually improve their mental health. So it's kind of seeing social media as neutral and going, it's how you use it as opposed to the facts of it that is the key thing. And what I encourage the young people who read the book to do is to see themselves as like curators of an art gallery and go, okay, this is my space. What am I going to put on the walls? And I talk a little bit in the book about how we learn through repetition. So our unconscious brains are always absorbing, because I think when we scroll, we're very often doing something else at the same time, or we're just bored. And we're not properly paying attention. So we have this tendency to underestimate the impact that the content that we see is having on us. But our unconscious brains, which are huge in comparison to the conscious brain, are always switched on and they're always absorbing. Mm-hmm. So even when you think you're not paying attention, they're taking in that information. And the unconscious brain learns through repetition. So if you're seeing something again and again and again and again, eventually you're going to take it on as an unconscious belief. And that means that what is in your feed and what's on the walls of your online art gallery really matters. Your environment really matters. So it's encouraging them to kind of take stock and go, what's on the walls of my art gallery and what needs swapping out?
Yeah. And also, you made a really good point about the fact that when we are pitching ourselves online, it's like a curated version of ourselves. And therefore, the validation that we then get isn't actually true validation, is it?
No, it's really odd. Psychological schism. And I think probably the reason is negativity bias. So all human beings have an inbuilt negativity bias because we tend to learn more from our mistakes than our successes. And our mistakes put us in danger. So we remember them more so that we don't put ourselves in that situation again. But what happens is we create this curated version of ourselves and send it into the online world to seek validation. And because we know that that is a very carefully curated version of ourselves and it's not a reflection of who we genuinely are, the praise that we receive never truly hits the spot, because we reason with ourselves, well, that person doesn't really know me. However, when we are criticized online, it really gets us in the feels. And we think, oh, they've seen the true me. They know something that other people don't. And so we have this sort of unfairness, really, where and you see it with celebrities. You see that when they post on social media, they can get thousands of positive comments, and then they'll get one person who will leave a negative comment, and that's the one that they will respond to, because that's the one that they have noticed. And then, of course, what that person learns is, oh, when I'm mean to people, I get attention. So they create trolls, you know, in doing that.
Yes, that's such a good point.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Point. And what about the way that social media, that we think social media has been designed, you know, to tap into our desire for validation and to give us that dopamine hit? You know, you have an illustration in the book of like a slot machine, a fruit machine. You know, and so when we get the notification, it, you know, sets off, you know, a dopamine release in our brain. You know, that feels pretty manipulative and dark to me. But yet, you know, obviously you're saying the internet and social media isn't a dark place. It's neutral.
Yeah, the way that the technology is designed is to be addictive, because in the financial transaction between apps and the people who pay to advertise products, services, and ideas on those apps, our focus and attention is the thing that is being sold. So the more of our attention they can harvest, the more money they can command. And so that's why it is designed to be addictive. And the psychology is like a slot machine. When we pull down our feed and it refreshes, if it was just positive stuff all the time, we wouldn't get that slight feeling of jeopardy. So it has to be what's going to come up? It, like a slot machine, is it going to be three lemons or is it going to be two lemons and a cherry kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And that's what keeps us hooked. But having said that, you know, there are lots of things that are addictive. Exercise is addictive. Alcohol is addictive. And they're not inherently terrible things. It's learning to practice moderation and knowing when you're meandering into dangerous territory. And I think that I heard it described that way once, actually, when we were talking about giving parents really stringent social media guidelines around technology. Someone actually did compare it to alcohol, and they said, you know, lots of people enjoy a drink in the evening, but you wouldn't be okay with your five-year-old just cracking open a can of Foster's at the dinner table and go, yeah, that's fine. You know, I find it enjoyable, so you can too. And it's about kind of, I think, seeing it in a similar way.
Yeah. So what are the signs then that our kids have developed unhealthy online habits?
So it's actually quite counterintuitive when you're being targeted in some way online, whether that's through cyberbullies or you're being radicalized, you tend to spend more time online, not less. And the logical thing to do is to go, okay, I'm going to take a step back from this, but we don't do that. So a sudden, real intense interest in something is one of the signs to look out for. As is the breakdown of communication. So if they stop talking to you about things, it's because they think that they have found someone or something online that's giving them the answers that they seek. And with any kind of mental health, if you look at the mental health vulnerability criteria, it's stuff like spends a lot of time in their room, strong political opinions, changes in fashion, and it's just being a teenager. You read it and you're like, what is this? Is this person has a mental illness or are they just a teenager? So I would say it's less useful to think about that in a contextless way and more useful to think, you know your child better than anyone and you know what their character is. So it's a sudden change in character. If they are naturally quite introverted, if they suddenly become angry over a sustained period of time, not just a hormonal blip, if they're usually quite confident, but they suddenly become very introverted, that those are the signs that you're looking out for.
And you know, there's quite a lot of talk in the online world about, you know, living in an echo chamber. And I found it really interesting reading about how technology and social media is actually designed to create that. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So what the algorithm is concerned with is keeping you online as long as possible. So what it will do is it will give you something that is slightly more shocking and entertaining than the last thing that you have seen. In terms of if you're looking at reels or if you're on YouTube or TikTok, it will push you towards the most extreme content. So you can see that in all kinds of ways. If you are curious about vegetarianism, it will start to push you towards content about veganism. If you want to know about jogging, it will push you towards content about super marathons. Another thing is, I talk a little bit in the book about pornography. I had to be so careful with that because, you know, obviously you can't write a book for teenagers about the internet without putting some stuff about pornography in there. Yeah. But equally, I didn't want to introduce anything that they hadn't already encountered. So I looked really closely at the evidence and, you know, what a 13-year-old would have seen. But with pornography, what they do is that the videos are embedded with keywords. So the algorithm learns about your preferences, but then pushes you towards more and more extreme content, which in turn starts to shape the sexual preferences. So there's all kinds of examples of how this works. But the one that I think concerns me most is the pushing towards really extreme points of view. And so you get these influencers like Andrew Tate, who part of the reason that they enjoy such popularity is because the algorithm is actually feeding them with people who might just be curious about what is feminism or how do we achieve gender equality. And it will end up on Andrew Tate because he's the one saying the most outrageous things, but outrage is an entertaining thing to feel as well. Yeah. And I get it. I do get it. Like I have been watching the National Conservative Conference that happened recently. And it is like watching a car crash and it is really entertaining to watch someone passionately spout hatred. It's scary, but there's a reason that we're, you know, attracted. But then you have to bear in mind that with these influencers, it's not just hatred. They kind of sprinkle it with some common sense as well, mm-hmm. to kind of draw in vulnerable people. And there's a formula that really works. So, I mean, I think that social media companies have a responsibility to not do that, to be honest. And that's something that will ultimately come out of all the discussions around the online harm bill. But in the meantime, what I've been asking young people to do is to go back and search fresh each time for each piece of content and not just click on whatever the algorithm is suggesting.
That's a really good bit of advice. Also, I think it's something that we can all do in terms of even just searching for points of view that are outside of our echo chamber. So like, for example, I'm very pro-trans rights and I've done several deep dives into the views of gender critical people just to try and understand if I'm honest, like just trying to think, hang on a minute, you know, am I missing something here? How can all these people think something completely polar opposite to what I believe? But social media, you know, have been designed to, you know, push you in one direction, one direction, one direction. It's really important, isn't it, that we like seek out alternative views?
Well, yes, because what will happen in your slipstream is you will see two things. You will see the views that support yours, but you'll see the most stupid takes from the views that don't support yours. So any kind of opposing view you see will be so ridiculous that you'll go, well, clearly, you know, anybody who doesn't support trans rights is a total idiot, right? But actually, you know, and I'm too a very vocal trans ally and I've done a lot of research into this, but there's kind of two flavors of transphobia. There's the straightforward kind of alt-right hideousness, but then there's this kind of lefty feminist women tend to be slightly older who fought really hard for single sex spaces and are genuinely worried that those are now in jeopardy. I don't agree with them, but I do see where they're coming from. And I don't Absolutely. Think they're bad. They're bad people. And that's what I mean when I say, you know, step outside of your slipstream occasionally and think of it like a maths problem. I don't agree with your solution, but I can see your workings.
Yeah. And also in the book, you talk a bit about not just jumping on, you know, not just offering up a hot take. So you gave an example of you tweeting something about Priti Patel and then realizing actually maybe that wasn't the best hot take to have.
Yeah, so I oh, such a bad story. So the Byline Times, who are a left-leaning newspaper, and genuinely they report things that no one else will dare touch. And they'd done this investigation and they had found that during COVID, the Home Office, there were all of these expenses that came up that had been to a beauty company. Now, it transpired that this beauty company apparently made PPE. And that's why they were giving, you know, tens of thousands of pounds to it. But there were also some other things on there that didn't quite add up and that were a bit dodgy. But what happened was that the Byline Times broke it and then other newspapers picked it up. And there was one company in particular that was an eyebrow company, or that their title was something to do with eyebrows. And the joke became Priti Patel has spent £70,000 on her eyebrows, right? That's what it became on social media. And I joined in with this because it was funny. And I tweeted a picture of someone with kind of bejeweled eyebrows. And so I'm wondering what this amount of money on eyebrows looks like. But I got a private message from a right-wing newspaper saying, do you accept that it was the wrong thing to do to spread this fake news? And didn't reply to that, but I did regret sharing it, not because of the joke, which I still maintain was, you know, moderately funny, but because what it allowed the right-wing newspapers to do was to discredit the Byline Times original investigation in its entirety just because of the eyebrow thing. So the other parts of that story never got discussed. They kind of shut it down.
Yeah. And you mentioned fake news, and you talk in the book about the importance of teaching our kids about reputable sources. But even like newspapers and broadcasters display bias, as we know. So what's a good way of encouraging young people to check facts from fake news?
Yeah. So I've had a lot of conversations with young people about this, where I say, yes, there is bias in quote unquote mainstream media. However, we do have rules that we have to follow. So, you know, I know this from the extensive training that we have to do at LBC about not saying anything that there isn't already evidence out there for, not libeling anyone, not slandering anyone. You know, those rules do not exist on YouTube. So whilst, of course, you shouldn't accept everything that you read in a tabloid newspaper, there still is a basic assurance there that makes them, in a weird way, that not more reliable, but just a different kind of source. On YouTube, people are just saying, you know, whatever. And I also have found that there is a whole swathe of influencers who create trust by pointing out the bias of the tabloid media. And they say, you know, look at this. This is so obviously an agenda. And, you know, like a three-year-old could tell you that this article has an agenda. But then what they do is they say, and that's why you should trust me. And then they go on to spout an absolute load of hokum. and you go, okay, well, just because somebody can see that the mainstream media has an agenda sometimes doesn't make them 100% trustworthy. But I do think it's dangerous to trust no one as well. We have to have an agreed set of facts that we all agree are reliable. So I have suggested some websites. Full Fact, for example, is a really good fact-checking website. You know, if you are talking about health, it's not perfect, but the NHS would be a good place to start to kind of, you know, check through what it is that you're being told. Always question, but also not so much. You know, is that saying that if your mind's too open, your brain will fall out? I had this recently where I was having a conversation on Twitter and someone said to me, can you prove to me that Brexit was bad? And I said, okay, here's some statistics. And I literally listed what we've lost in GDP versus what we stand to gain from joining another trading bloc, and the cost of businesses and the cost of the divorce bill. And, you know, I just listed all of these statistics. And they replied and said, it sounds to me like you are using leftist statistics. That's a very good example of somebody who you could put anything in front of them and yeah. they would never believe it because it doesn't match their point of view. And I think that's just as dangerous as yeah. believing everything, if you see what I mean.
And you said that young people are kind of almost veering towards that where they don't believe anything they see online because they feel like everything is fake news.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that where and a lot of young people saying to me, I will entertain any idea, no matter how silly, because I think it's really important to listen to everything. And I don't agree with that. But, yeah. You know, there are some things where you have to go, nah, you're all right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So Natasha, your book is such a brilliant guide for parents as well. I mean, to be honest, I have learned a bunch and also just been reminded of stuff that I already knew but kind of forgotten because we're busy. So I would absolutely recommend it to all parents of teenagers, but also that kind of 8 to 12, you know, buy it, read it yourself and tuck it away for when they're a little bit older and then hand it over. So it's Clicks, How to Be Your Best Self Online, and it's available to buy now. But where can we find you online, Natasha, so that we can hear more from you?
My website is natashadevon.com. You can find out about my campaigns and the other books that I've written. There's also a page on there called Advice and Support, and there's about 20 different charities on there that offer confidential support and evidence-based information on mental health. Just for any parents listening who... are struggling because their child is experiencing mental health issues, I always like to point out that young minds have a parent helpline. So if your child is aged, I think it's between 12 and 25, you can call them and they'll give you some advice on how to manage that relationship. So and you can find that on via my website. In terms of socials, I'm only on two. I'm on Twitter, but I do not enjoy it. I'm only on there because
I don't think anyone enjoys Twitter these days.
It's just people shouting in a bin. It's awful. But I am nominally one day a week a journalist, so I kind of have to be on there. But the one that I would say I'm most active on is Instagram, and I'm _ Natasha Devon on there.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining me today, Natasha. It's been so great to chat to you.
Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.